Valparaiso University is going to hold its second annual Dialogue and Discernment event on Thursday evening at the Helge Center on the Valparaiso University campus. The topic this time is an interesting documentary, which is entitled Bring It to the Table. Julie Winoker is the documentary filmmaker who has created this particular film. And as part of the event, she is going to not only present the documentary for those who attend, but also have a little table talk afterwards as well. Julie's with us from her offices. Thank you very much for being with us today, Julie.
Thank you.
Tell us, if you will, first, what were the ideas behind creating Bring It to the Table?
So I launched this project about 5 years ago when my son was 17, and he told me I was the most politically intolerant person that he knew.
What a horrible thing to hear from your son.
Exactly. From his perspective, I guess it looked that way. I don't believe that is true. I certainly have met many more intolerant or much more intolerant people than I am or was. But I took to heart what he had to say, and he basically said, if the other side had a good idea, you wouldn't know it because you weren't listening. And that is a sobering comment, that obviously had a grain of truth. So I took the challenge on. I was not satisfied being that person or that version of myself. So I decided that I would travel the country with a small table and invite people to sit down and talk politics. And my whole goal was to learn how to listen. And I ended up, I brought a crew with me. I'm a documentary filmmaker, so that's how I do things. And I traveled all over the country. We had about 120 different people sit at the table. We went to the Republican and Democratic National Conventions. We set up in really familiar settings like baseball parks and libraries and paint stores and places that felt very familiar. And my goal was to try to understand why people believe what they believe. So it was a huge personal challenge to become a better citizen and to invite conversations instead of shut them down and to try to understand how each of us arrives at the conclusions we do.
Now, we're familiar with the StoryCorps project, which you hear on public radio all the time, where you basically have a conversation typically between two people, sometimes as family members, sometimes as best friends and the like, and they bring up some very intimate and sometimes very difficult to talk about topics. Did you find sort of the same effect as well in putting these conversations together and bring it to the table?
Yeah, well, while I was traveling, I would sit down with each of these people individually, and then when we came back into the edit booth, we basically decided to edit together a lot of these voices because we were hearing a lot of similar topics coming up regularly, and we wanted to bring these folks together, but in a way that was very calm and thoughtful and truly modeled civil discourse. And the whole idea here was that, we all have these kind of tripwires. Somebody says something that disagrees with what you believe. You get angry. You spend the rest of the conversation trying to prove them wrong. And this is kind of how it plays out at Thanksgiving tables across the country, right? Mm-hmm. Every one of us has a family member, a friend, somebody who we just cannot talk politics with. So what we did with the film and what my public presentations are all about is how do you stop that type of conversation from happening and shift the dynamic so that we can have constructive conversations? And that's what I have been traveling the country now. I've been touring with the film, doing presentations on a lot of college campuses in particular, where I model what is a different kind of tense and difficult political conversation look like.
Now, since you're coming to Valparaiso University, one of these college campuses that you've just referred to, what enticed them to approach you and ask you if you would bring it to the table, to their table, so to speak, on Thursday evening?
Well, I think the center is completely aimed at this type of, the ability to have healthy, constructive dialogue. Really it's related to the whole dialogue and deliberation movement. And I'm really honored that they've brought me in to talk about perhaps the toughest topic you could bring to the table, which is reproductive rights. And I'm really I'm in awe of the fact that, you know, the university is embracing this kind of a conversation. It impacts all of us. I think we all have very strong and very emotional responses to the question of reproductive rights. So I feel honored to be able to show my methodology and share with people, because I feel like it's an opportunity to have a more authentic and just a productive conversation about reproduction.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Julie Winokur, who is, by the way, the executive director of a company called Talking Eyes Media. And Julie, in the big scope of the company, doing documentaries and other types of presentations, how does this particular program, Bring It to the Table, fit into everything?
So my entire career is aimed at positive social change. I feel like the media is an incredibly powerful tool to make a difference in the world. Very early in my career, I really differentiated between being part of a media that I think is part of the problem versus part of the solution to the challenges in front of us. And so I founded my company, Talking Eyes, 14 years ago as a nonprofit media company that is aimed 100% at trying to advocate for positive social change.
And you think, too, that public media obviously is a good way to be able to present that viewpoint. I know you do a lot of your presentations and films, including Bring It to the Table, for public television.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of public media. I feel like it's thoughtful. It's deep. It does, you know, it's not necessarily the flashiest, but I think it is the most lasting and has tremendous credibility and needs to, you know, preserve that sacred space.
That puts you in the same group of people, a good company like Susan Stamberg, who, of course, got involved in public media a long time ago and has become one of the, I guess you can say, the founding mothers of National Public Radio.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Absolutely.
When you take a look at Bring It to the Table, since it's a labor of love, you've spent so much time with it, you and your staff putting this together, editing it, making it available for presentation, and now taking it on the road to these presentations, do you see things when you get to see this over and over again and get to talk about it to many, many different people, things that you can add to it maybe to do another version, a new version sometime in the future?
I would love to do that, and now is the time. I mean, look at what's going on nationally, and I think a lot of people are waking up saying this is a mess. This isn't the best of us. How do we talk to the other side? You know, half this country certainly can't, you know, be demonized in the eyes of the other half. You know, so I think now's the time. It's a critical moment, and it's a moment of opportunity. I hate to be negative, you know, but definitely an optimist. I think now is a perfect moment to say, hey, wake up, you know. We need to talk to each other, and we need to do it a lot more productively.
Now, you're bringing in your presentation to Valparaiso University for the Dialogue and Discernment Evening on Thursday, talking about the topic of reproductive rights. And obviously, you've got a lot more topics of that are in the film Bring It to the Table. Will you have time to be able to bring up some of these other things, even though that's not the main part of the discussion on Thursday?
Yeah, I'm sure other issues will come to the table, because everything is interconnected. You know, so when I sit at the table, and I'll be doing live table talks at the event, and people in the audience will be participating, everybody will have a chance to participate. You don't have your opinions about reproductive rights in isolation. It's not in a vacuum. It's related to an entire ideological framework that is where you're comfortable. So we're going to be examining that and trying to figure out, you know, why is this issue something you feel so passionately about, you know, on one side or the other, because it tends to be bifurcated. So it's not disconnected from the rest of your belief system. So let's talk about that, and let's try to put it in context with a much bigger picture.
Now, Julie, while we have this opportunity to talk, you talked a little bit about what Talking Eyes Media does in general. Are there any other projects that are in editing right now or about to be presented that will come out that people should take a look at, or certainly be aware of and watch for when they do come out?
Absolutely. We have a large project called Newest Americans. We actually just received a National Endowment for the Humanities grant. It is a storytelling project around immigration and identity. And we work with Rutgers University in Newark, which is the most diverse campus in the United States. And we're looking at reframing the narrative around immigration, giving stories to this very interesting, diverse world that we live in that are truer to their experiences, rather than, again, reducing immigration to, the sort of us and them framework that we tend to look at.
We've been talking with a documentary filmmaker and the executive director of a media company, Talking Eyes Media. Julie Winoker is going to be present for the showing of her documentary, Bring It to the Table, and some table talks after the program. It's part of the second annual Dialogue and Discernment event at Valparaiso University, happening on Thursday evening, starting at 7 o'clock. It'll be in the Helge Center on the VU campus. Julie, thank you very much for being with us on Regionally Speaking to talk about it today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been wonderful.
The documentary that you'll hear on Thursday, or you'll see on Thursday evening, has its own website, by the way, which is bringittothenumber2table.org. Or you can also find out more about Julie and her colleagues' other work at the website talkingeyesmedia.org. Let's get the latest on some controversial bills for this General Assembly session. The Indiana Senate advanced legislation on Tuesday that raises taxes and creates new fees to fund the state's road and bridge maintenance. Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith has more on the more than hour-long debate on the floor.
The Senate version of the road funding bill raises the gas tax 10 cents over the next 2 years. It raises commercial vehicle fees by $100 and adds a new $5 fee on all tire purchases. Like the House, it creates a $15 registration fee for all vehicles and authorizes the governor to explore tolling. And unlike the House, it does not shift sales tax on gasoline dollars to pay for roads. Republican Senator Mike Delf looks at all that and says the bill goes too far.
There are a lot of folks that can't afford all the fees and all the taxes and all the potential tolling that we are about to impose upon them.
But Republican Senator Luke Kenly says voting for the bill is about ensuring Indiana continues moving forward economically.
Or we don't have enough guts to raise the revenue to do the things that we need to do.
The Senate advanced the bill 34-13. It now heads to conference committee, where both chambers will work out their differences. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
The Indiana House passed a bill that changes the state's net metering policy. The measure passed 56-43. Many lawmakers spoke against it last evening, citing extraordinary negative public input and saying that the matter should be studied further. GOP Representative Mike Speedy says his opposition was purely for an economic reason.
This makes no sense for us to turn our backs on competition, choice, freedom, and stuff at the small business.
But Republican Representative Dave Ober, who co-sponsored the bill, says the General Assembly can roll it back next session if Hoosiers feel those negative effects that may be referred to.
If this bill is enacted and it creates a problem, I guarantee you that we'll be back addressing this, as we probably will with distributed generation for the next 10 years.
Currently, more than 1,000 Hoosiers participate in net metering. They generate their own electricity by using solar panels or wind turbines, and they can get a credit on their utility bill if they generate more energy than they use. The bill lowers the amount of credit. The Senate now needs to approve the House changes to the bill. If the Senate doesn't agree to the changes, then the bill will go to a conference committee. The Hoosier Environmental Council is urging Governor Eric Holcomb to veto Senate Bill 309 when he gets it, whatever version it may be, and stand up for what the organization is calling 21st century jobs and innovation. The executive director of the HEC, Jesse Carbonta, said in a statement that lawmakers backed a bill that will move Indiana backwards when it comes to a critical segment of the solar industry and could affect consumer-owned solar power. We have in the studio with us somebody who is seen on Lakeshore PBS, and we will see once again the Whitney Reynolds Show, if I get the title right, Whitney. The new season is going to premiere on April 10th at 6:30 in the evening on Lakeshore PBS. And just a little information if you have not seen the show, and shame on you if you have at least not checked it out once. It's a half-hour talk show that strives to make a difference in the world by breaking down real-life issues, one topic at a time, and also to educate, motivate, and inspire the audience. We have the person who does all that, Whitney Reynolds, with us in the studio. Thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
It is great to be here. It's wild to think we're going into season 7 right now. I still can't believe it. I remember whenever we first came over here, and it was a big season of launching powerful topics, and I can't believe that we're in season 7.
Tell us a little bit about yourself for folks that I know you've made some references on the program at times. But for those folks listening on radio that have not caught the show on television, tell us a little about yourself and what got you interested in doing a program like this.
So when I was actually a little girl, most people were dressing up as princesses, and I was always one that was trying to be like Jenny Jones or something. My mom was mortified, but I said, one day I'm going to have a talk show. And I just kind of always followed that forward in my life, and it was about getting to this point. You can't go to college and say, oh, I'm going to graduate with a talk show degree. So it was one of those things of when I had the opportunity, when I moved to Chicago, I started an online talk show. We first launched on NBC Nonstop, which is a secondary channel in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to PBS, we made strategic changes, which were all about basically making a positive impact through the topics.
Now, you do have news background, which I'm sure that got you the experience, at least in front of the camera after college, and so you had a chance to be familiar with that. And this way, once you got your chance to be out in the field and do stand-up pieces out there on the air, either live or recorded, and those have gotten, of course, into a newscast someplace, you had that experience, so you felt more comfortable. And then obviously that kind of morphed into what you're doing now with the talk format.
Right. I was actually a morning anchor right out of school at 21 years old, and I learned how to talk on TV. I was talking for 2 hours a day. My first newscast, I mean, God bless them. People didn't call in and send me hate mail, thank goodness, because I forgot my name and all their, you know, it's right there in the teleprompter. So it was a fall on your face experience, that first news channel that hired me, but I learned how to talk on air, and I also learned about integrity of pieces. And, you know, we live in a day and age where it's easy just to say, oh, let's run with this story. But really, what I learned in news is, what are the details? What do people need to know that is the truth behind the story?
When you got the idea to create your own program, the Whitney Reynolds Show, you had a chance to put all this experience together in not only as in front of the camera for doing a newscast or a news program or related topics, but you had a chance to get some talk show experience put in there too. Tell us how you got these all organized together to do the kind of show that you want to do that you get to see now on Lakeshore PBS.
Well, I've always had this heart for helping others, which is another element to me. And when I stepped into this PBS platform with Lakeshore, it was really nice because I knew that I was going to make my voice count. You know, we live in a day and age where there's a lot of information thrown at us. There's a lot of TV platforms that are talking about gossip or who wore what. That's not what I wanted to be about. I wanted to make my voice count, and I wanted to be a voice for the people that have these stories that need to be heard.
I mean, some great stories, and you can also, she has her own personal website as well. You can check out some of the topics that she has covered in the past. And if you will, give us, without giving away too much, because we want folks to catch the next season coming up, an idea of some of the topics you're going to be addressing at first here.
Yeah, so our first show, we kick off with Confronting Wellness. And what does that mean? It basically means playing offense instead of defense with breast cancer. It's a different approach to combating wellness. So it was a really great show. I can't wait for everyone to tune in and see it, because we really are talking about ways to be proactive with your health instead of reactive, which is such an amazing thing to cover. We also have Special Olympics. Did you know, I'm sure people are listening right now and say, oh, the Special Olympics, I've heard of that. You see it everywhere. Did you know it started in Chicago with the Park District? No, I bet you didn't. No, that is one of the most amazing things is when I was in Oklahoma, which is where I grew up, we had the Special Olympics, but here it started in Chicago. So we actually break down where that came from. We also, one of our most amazing shows I think we covered with such delicacy and the impact of this, it's so real. It's a tough show to watch, but it's beautiful what comes out of it. We're talking rape on college campuses, which is a really hot topic. We're sitting down with survivors. So it was a tough interview. It was something that was really challenging to get through. But at the end, you will see the hope that these stories bring.
We've been talking with Whitney Reynolds. The new season of The Whitney Reynolds Show is going to premiere on April 10th at 6:30 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Television, Lakeshore PBS. And if you would like to find out more, you can always go online to check out her website as well, too. Whitney, thank you for stopping by the studio to talk about the new program series coming up. And we hope that a lot of folks tune in. And it's on repeats, by the way, too. You can take a look at the Lakeshore PBS website, lakeshorepublicmedia.org, right now, and look down for the Whitney Reynolds Show and find out more about the show, as well as check out when it's aired for its first time, in this case, in the evening at 6:30.
Monday nights. Every Monday, 6:30. Sundays at 10:30.
That's great. That's great. Thank you very much for being with us to talk about it, Whitney.
Thank you.
Counterpoint with Gerard McClendon took up the subject not long ago of the Northwest Indiana economy on Lakeshore PBS. Gerard's guests were Ty Warner with the Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Commission, also known as NERPC, Northwest Indiana Times business reporter Joseph Peet, and IU Northwest's professor of economics, Micah Pollack. Here's the conversation.
I've got 300 questions. I'll probably only get to three, you know.
We may have 400 answers.
That's good. So we'll just have to go part two, part three, part four. Let me get some intro first, though. First of all, Ty Warner, explain what you do at NERPC.
Sure. NERPC is the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission. It's the Council of Governments for Northwestern Indiana. It covers Lake Porter, LaPorte County, 41 municipalities. Basically, it's the place where all those municipalities come together on a regular basis to talk about things that are bigger than any one of them.
Yeah.
And then what most people know us for in the region is our designation as the MPO, or Metropolitan Planning Organization. That's a federal designation, has to do with the distribution of federal transportation funds, so major road, trail, transit projects, that money gets funneled through NERPC.
Good, good. Joseph Peet, Northwest Indiana Times, business reporter. What does that mean? I mean, we've read articles from business reporters, but what's your chief responsibility?
I mainly cover steel and heavy industry, like automotive, but I cover a wide array of industries like groceries, banking, craft brewing, the high-tech startups. If it's business in Northwest Indiana, I cover a lot of it.
Excellent, excellent. Micah Pollack, Indiana University Northwest economics professor, macro or microeconomics, what is your field of interest in economics?
Sure, my field is mostly microeconomics, but I'm becoming increasingly interested in regional economics. Being here in Northwest Indiana, it's a fascinating place to study, you know, regional economics, because we have such an interesting economy and history.
Gentlemen, let's start out by asking this question. Are we relegated to retail and service jobs? There was a time when 30,000-40,000 workers worked in those mills, you know, USS, and at the time, back in the day, it was Inland. It's ArcelorMittal now. But then shopping malls popped up and casinos popped up and suburban areas popped up, and then steel industry kind of decreased. Are we relegated to just retail and service now? Who wants to start us off?
Well, we did have more bad news coming out of ArcelorMittal today.
Oh,
unfortunately. Well, it's kind of mixed, actually. But they had their quarterly earnings report, and they announced they are restarting a blast furnace at ArcelorMittal Indiana Harbor in East Chicago. However, they're going to be idling several finishing lines, including the aluminizing line, the galvanizing line, a steel shop, and a the hot strip mall, and the 84-inch. And while that's not, there won't be any layoffs, they're going to lose jobs through attrition, that's more jobs that won't be in there in the future. As recently as like the 70s, we had 70,000 good-paying steel jobs here in Northwest Indiana. Now it's dwindled down to about 20,000. There's been wave after wave of imports, but the biggest change is automation. Like, just so much of it more is automated. Some of those trains go through there hauling, like, the coking coal, and they're not operated by anybody anymore. Like, it's just all a robot train. And then, you know, we don't have people manually shoveling coal into blast furnaces or manually unloading iron ore boats. And it's just the job opportunities that were once there, where you could literally come in off a train with a bindle and just walk into the mill and be hired on day one.
You know, Joe, you know, I really appreciate you setting us up there, because I want to go to Professor Pollack next in terms of the gross metropolitan product. I really want you to talk about this GMP as opposed to the GMP. NP, and then we'll relate it later to what Joseph Pete just said about some of those roles at ArcelorMittal being idled. What is the GMP?
Absolutely. So gross domestic product, a lot of people are familiar with, is the value of all the goods and services produced by the nation or by a larger group like a state. And so we've recently started publishing gross metropolitan product, which is a measure of the value of the goods and services produced here in Northwest Indiana. So it's the same kind of economic variables that you look at nationwide to track growth and kind of our quality of life, and we're starting to track them here in Northwest Indiana. So we can kind of see how our economy is changing and measure it kind of over time and track and forecast where it's going.
So, Ty Warner, you have to fill some very, very large shoes being the executive director of NERPC. I've done some consulting for NERPC back in the day. I used to be the program manager for an urban enterprise association. So I've spent lots of time in that building. What's your responsibility when it comes to infrastructure, when it comes to making Northwest Indiana more amenable, more attractive? Yeah. What is the executive director of NERPC's responsibility as it pertains to, you know, somewhat of the fallout of what these gentlemen were talking about?
Sure. Well, in addition to the functions that I mentioned before, NERPC's got this role of a regional planning agency that tries to cast a vision for Northwestern Indiana. So it tries to say, where's the whole region headed and what's the collective input of folks all across this region?
So there's a vision?
There absolutely is.
There's a vision for Northwest Indiana. Okay. So when it comes to board meetings, when it comes to you speaking with your staff, yeah, holistically, what is that vision?
Yeah. In a nutshell, is to make a more vibrant, accessible, united, and revitalized region. I mean, that's the capsulized statement. But getting to that point was a process that involved thousands of people all across Northwestern Indiana to come up with that. Yeah. That was inculcated in something called the 2040, so the year 2040, Comprehensive Regional Plan. And that takes us out with a whole series of goals and focus areas to try to say, if we're going to get to that end state, here's all the things that we have to kind of get in line to work together to do to get us there.
I know it's the Northern Indiana Regional Planning Commission.
Northwestern, yeah.
Northwestern Indiana. So it's Northwestern, but are you getting support from downstate?
You know,
or do you even invite it?
We have a great partnership with Indianapolis. We work a lot with the Indiana Department of Transportation, and I'd say that relationship is getting better all the time. Mm. So, you know, I've said this before. I think in Northwestern Indiana's history, it's sometimes easy to kind of say, you know, whine about, because, you know, I think there was some truth to this, that Chicago and people in the Illinois side, and that's where most of my career was before coming to NERPC, would overlook Northwest Indiana, yeah, because it's another, you know, it's another state. So
the region,
Right, exactly. So it's, yeah, kind of, it's over there. And then Indianapolis, you'd get it from downstate as well, because they say, well, we don't really think about Northwestern Indiana because that's Chicago. But that's changing rapidly. There's a lot of stuff that's happening by state now, and a lot of stuff that's happening through, could go into things like the Regional Cities Initiative that have helped tell the story of Northwestern, yeah, Indiana, so that folks in Indianapolis say, this is our gateway to the Chicago economy for the state.
Got you. So I'm trying to my best to remain optimistic as I go to Joseph Pete from the Northwest Indiana.
Stay optimistic
here, you know, because I'm looking at
how can bring it crashing down.
He said how steel capacity utilization is under 70% now, and how employment in the industry has fallen from what you said earlier, the 30,000. So is there a bounce back? As a reporter of business of these industries, Joseph Pete, do you see other ways of Northwest Indiana leveraging? Is there an advantage in some of this despair? I know you're a reporter and you have to deal with facts, but I'm just asking you right now to commentate.
Oh, absolutely. While heavy industry, you know, what we're known for has been declining, like the economy is diversifying somewhat. We are seeing a rise in steel is commodity manufacturing, but we're seeing a rise in like advanced manufacturing. We have innovative companies like Pratt, Monosol, Fronius. Mm-hmm. Monosol, here in Maryville, they make the dissolvable film for the wildly popular Tide Pods. They've revolutionized the way people do, for Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati, a Fortune 50 company, they've revolutionized the way people all over the world do You know, their laundry and their dishes. We have Pratt Industries out of Australia. They just invested $250 million into one of the world's largest recycled paper mills in Valparaiso. We have, there is a lot of investment and there's a lot of good things. But the difference is, like, these steel mills had employed like 20, 30,000 people. And these companies, while they're successful and they're prospering and they're investing, they don't employ anybody at the scale. That, you know, we don't have they're still hiring manufacturing jobs and they're still good paying jobs, but we just don't have the same scale that we did with the mills.
I love those pods. Those make, those make my life so easy, you know. I don't mind washing dishes or doing the laundry with those, you know. It just makes it, I don't have to do any measuring or anything.
Right. And we should have pride what we make in Northwest Indiana. We make, like, the Build-A-Bear machines. We make a lot of different things here. Like, it's
good stuff.
We're not just steel.
Yeah. So I got about 1 minute left in this segment, so I got to ask you, and I'll continue this, Dr. Pollack, the Indiana Coincident Economic Index. What is this ICI? What is this?
So that is kind of the background index that we use to construct things like gross metropolitan product. It's an index that measures in a single number. It was 143.0 back in September is the most recent value, the health of Northwest Indiana's economy, and we can track it up and down kind of month to month, year to year, and just can keep an idea of how the economy's doing.
You can track it month to month?
Yep, and you can go on the website. We publish it every month. You can go and see the latest the edition. It gets published in the Times as well, so you can go on and track it yourself.
Yeah. Is that index just for a nerd to look at? How does that?
No, definitely not.
So I ask that question because, you know, what if the everyday retail worker takes a look at that? What are they going to get out of it?
Absolutely. I mean, they can compare this month to last month. Last month it was 143.1, so it went down 0.1 points, which means our economy shrunk very slightly between August and September. And so you can just go online, you can look at the number each month, and it'll give you an idea of whether things are improving. And we also include a forecast for the next 6 months as well, so you can see how that forecast changes too.
Michael Pollack, Joseph Pete, and Ty Warner joining us at the Counterpoint. Gentlemen, let's continue the wonderful discussion about Northwest Indiana and industry. I want to look at something that I've been thinking about for quite some time. Ty from NERPC. Should mayors in Northwest Indiana, should they spend more time talking to you about some of the trends taking place in Northwest Indiana? Oftentimes, it seems like mayors are on, mayors, town managers, it seems like they're on these islands alone. And Northwest Indiana can be very polarized, to say the least, right? 17 communities, no one really can agree on anything at times. So, you know, when the mayor of Gary or the mayor of Hammond or the town manager in Maryville says, you know, what can we do here? We need analytics. Yeah. Can Ty Warner and the NERPC crew help me? What do you say for that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the whole reason for NERPC is so those folks have a place to come together and be able to share that kind of information. In fact, a lot of the stuff that happens at NERPC is just that. It's a forum where folks from one community learn from another community and say, hey, that's a great idea. Maybe I can learn from that and implement something in my own town. So that's exactly the forum where that takes place.
Is there ever any purging, though?
Purging.
So let's say a big company is looking at Northwest Indiana, mm-hmm. and so they say, Portage looks interesting. So does Valpo, but Hammond's got extra land. Do you steer them one way or the other, or can you be the person to just facilitate and say, why don't you look at all three?
Well, a couple ways to answer that. I mean, we all work together with partners all across the region. So the Northwest Indiana Forum, who we're co-located with, they would be more involved in helping to, you know, tell a company that wants to locate in Northwest Indiana, here's some options or here's some of the people you should talk with. We provide the infrastructure and the backbone that might provide the places for those companies to want to locate. You know, if they need to look for a particular rail spur, they need to look for an interchange location. We're providing the infrastructure. Other groups are helping to steer that in. Groups like the Regional Development Authority are providing other amenities that's making that attractive for a business. So everybody's working together to make that happen. And I gotta just say, just come back to your question about the polarization and all that. I think that's changing rapidly in Northwest Indiana. Absolutely. So, and it's even better news than just that the 17 you mentioned. It's Lakeport and LaPorte County, 41 municipalities that are all working together for this kind of thing. When I came to NERPC, I heard that all the time. about how balkanized the region was. And frankly, I really haven't seen it. I
mean, you haven't seen it.
Folks have their squabbles, sure. But for the most part, I think this region has really bandied together to say, look, we got to all work together to try to capture, you know, growth in this general market.
Yeah.
And we're on the brink of a lot of cool stuff in Northwest Indiana.
I want to come back to that balkanization in a minute. I want to go to Joseph Pete. So, Joseph Pete, you're the business reporter, Northwest Indiana Times. There are businesses who at times just want to make themselves look good, all right? So they may send you a press release. Joseph Pete, look at what we're doing. We just employ 45 people. You know, our sales are up. We just utilize this tax break so that we can hire more employees. Run the press release. Do you ever run a press release or do you investigate more? I say this because there's this little company out of Cupertino, California called Apple that writes these amazing press releases. And people think these press releases are the gospel because when they introduce a new product, many times the reporters don't even tamper with the press release because Apple has great writers who make their product launch look like news. What do you do if a Northwest Indiana company says, Joseph Pete, we're great. Print it. What do you do? Yeah.
Well, I mean, we don't just like, we would never print a press release verbatim, and we don't do it at, we don't take what they say at face value. You know, we do additional, often they do have good news to report, though. They will be investing millions of dollars, that kind of thing. But we do follow up on these things to make sure that they're coming through with, like, their hiring. A lot of the incentives in the state, the tax incentives that they give, are based upon hiring to ensure that people actually get the companies are actually, you know, if they say they're going to employ 500 people, they don't get the tax breaks unless they actually do hire that many. Mm-hmm. It's tied to the employment. And then we've had, especially with the Indiana Economic Development Corporation out of Indianapolis, they tend to do these very rosy press releases about, you know, oh, so-and-so is investing here and you know, hiring there. But usually we'll call the company and kind of confirm that that's what, because sometimes the numbers can be a little, like, inflated or pie in the sky.
Yeah.
Or oftentimes, too, when the companies are coming from Illinois, they'll say, oh, well, they're going to hire, you know, 300 people in Indiana. But in reality, it's going to be, 200 of those people are just going to we're already working in Illinois and are commuting now
right.
to Indiana, 20 minutes across the border. So we do due diligence always when we get those. But that's, you know, if companies have something to celebrate, there's no reason not to celebrate it. We need to highlight any kind of positive economic news we have, especially with, you know, the condition of the steel industry and
yeah.
everything.
Dr. Michael Pollack, so this question has been in my head for like the last month. You've been on the show before, and I said, I got to ask him when he comes on the show, what's more sustainable? And I'm going to point this strictly toward Northwest Indiana. What's more sustainable, many small companies that employ or fewer large employers when it comes to the macro-micro world? Well, what do you think?
Sure. I mean, there's some of each, but I think the trend is more towards smaller companies. You know, we have a kind of more dynamic world, kind of global economy now, and you have to be kind of very nimble, and you have to be able to kind of respond very quickly, and that's much easier to do for smaller companies. So smaller companies tend to be a little bit more competitive. At the same time, this also means the bigger companies that we have tend to have to pay more attention to being able to change quickly. They can't just keep doing what they've been doing all along because market forces can shift overnight now with such a global economy.
Do we have enough workers in Northwest Indiana to sustain our labor needs and our tech needs?
That's a tough question. We have a lot of workers. They're not trained as well as they need to be. That's guaranteed. Connexus Indiana is an organization that comes out with a grade every year for a variety of categories for the state of Indiana and other states. And our lowest grade has consistently been in human capital, mm-hmm. Which is education and training. We usually get a C or around that part. You know, coming from education, a C is, you know, it's barely passing at that point. You know, we really like to go for that A. So we don't have the training and the education that we need here. Northwest Indiana, we have fewer bachelor's degrees fisheries than the state as a proportion of our population, and much fewer than the nation. So we need to invest more in education. But the flip side of this, and maybe Ty will talk about this some, is that it's not enough just to train these people and to get them educated. We have to get them to stay in the region. Right?
Yeah.
If we invest and train them and then they move to Illinois or to Chicago, you know, we've kind of wasted a lot of resources there.
So do we need to train people? Do they just need to be more educated? And how do we curtail brain drain?
Right.
You know, so many students of mine, Dr. McClendon, soon as I graduate, I'm moving to Indianapolis. Soon as I graduate, I'm going to Columbus. I'm going to Atlanta.
Yep.
Where I can get two or three jobs in the minute I'm there. NERPSI, mm-hmm. Ty Warner. What do you say for that?
Part of that vision I was talking about earlier, this is all part of it. The big key phrase here is quality of place, and that's what we need to create in Northwest Indiana. So to try to keep people here, you got to have places where people actually want to live. And I've said this before, too. We have a lot of price points of housing across Northwestern Indiana. We don't have a lot of housing types. And what I mean by that is the kind of loft apartments, the kind of downtown amenities that so many folks want to live in, like folks, students of yours that might be going to Indianapolis. Look what Indianapolis has done to enhance their downtown, their walkability, their livability, to make it a place where you want to be. We can do that in Northwest Indiana. We have some spots that are capitalizing on that, but we can do a lot more.
This is a good point, because I want to go to Joseph Pete on this. Are you finding in your business writing and reporting that there are vibrant startups in Northwest Indiana? So you mentioned the craft brew industry. There's a fairly vibrant craft brewing industry in Northwest Indiana. But do you find that, I guess holistically, that there are numerous companies starting up and being sustainable and maintaining value within Northwest Indiana?
There are some startups like Loopy Cases in Cherryville developed a new case like for the iPhone that they're where, you know, you hold it with your finger and it prevents you from dropping it. They're selling that like all over the world. You do have pockets of innovation like that throughout the region. The part of the problem, though, is in this area, unlike Chicago and like Silicon Valley, you don't have like venture capitalists. Mm-hmm. We had a very innovative company in Michigan City called Rockzip High Balloons, where they originally developed balloons that you could shoot up to the very edge of space to like the upper atmosphere. And then originally they were going to sell it to universities to do research. But then later Google and Facebook started wanting to make internet more widespread, so they saw a market where, hey, we can, you know, sell this to like Google and Facebook so that they can improve internet access across the world.
Yeah.
However, the problem they ran into here was that they didn't have enough venture capitalists to keep them going, and then they ended up moving to California.
So, Joseph Pete, let me go to Micah Pollack. Do we need more venture capitalists here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have to compete with Chicago, and that's really hard for us to do because, you know, we're still Indiana and we're still relatively small compared to Chicago, but, you know, geographically, we are directly competing with Chicago, and so we really have to make every kind of dollar count and make sure we get a really good, you know, bang for our buck, essentially, and that's why, you know, the stuff that Ty's doing is incredibly important because we have to coordinate. We can't have these fragmented markets. We can't have, you know, little pockets here and then there. We need a combined kind of effort to make sure that we're actually providing what venture capitalists, what young entrepreneurs, what the next generation really want here in Northwest Indiana so that we can become a place that they want to go to, not a place they want to leave from.
Yeah, yeah. Ty Warner, the show is closing, but from NERPSI, being the ED of NERPSI, is there optimism, man? Is there a rainbow here on the horizon?
There definitely is. This region is coming together in a way that it hasn't for a long, long time. I mean, folks are heading in the right direction, all moving together, trying to make this a great place to live, to work, to come to. We can spend another hour, 2 hours, 3 hours just going through all those things that have been happening in just a very recent amount of time. So the answer is yes.
This Counterpoint with Gerard McClendon conversation was first aired on Lakeshore PBS last November. That's it for Regionally Speaking. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.